Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. If you think I sound awful right now, you should have heard me yesterday. If you want to hear me from yesterday, I did the show late with Harrison on the Lake Show with SB Nation, and it was ugly. But I'm joined by Pete. I'm still upright. The Lakers are now upright after a win against Dallas. How you doing?
I'm good, man. The mood of this is a lot different than it would have been had they not come back in that second half.
Ooh. So all right. So I'm going to use that as a jumping board to get into this conversation. I'm seeing a lot of people treat that win as like a season's back, we're good kind of thing. I think it's a sigh of relief. That's how I would describe it. I think it's a Oh, thank God that could have gone really poorly and it didn't, and therefore we are now still upright. And so how are you viewing the win? How are you looking at things after the fact that they did come back against Dallas?
No, I see it similarly to you. Part of what was frustrating about the first half of that game was I thought the Lakers played hard. I thought they played okay all in all. And so I'm watching this and like, I'm not frustrated by a ton. There are some things, but I'm like, damn, and they're still down 13. Do we just suck exactly. that badly? You know, like, yeah. And so with how Lonzo and Brandon played the day before and with just how things have gone, like, I feel like it would have started to get real interesting around here had they not pulled that off. So it doesn't necessarily mean that everything's great. You know, obviously they need LeBron. They need, and it's a cumulative effect too, right? Like Kuzma went 4-for-20 in that game, but having another legit NBA guy on the court, like I feel like that mattered, even though he didn't shoot particularly well. So having LeBron and Rondo out is going to have an impact beyond just LeBron's greatness. So yeah, like I don't think it's necessarily a turning point, but they really needed that win and for it to happen the way that it did with the energy level and the defense and all that.
Yeah. What I find more, I guess, important, for lack of a better term, than any kind of significant turnaround moment. 'Cause here's the thing with young teams. They have multiple turning points in a season. It's just a whole bunch of U-turns, really.
Well, yeah, it's not a straight line, exactly. Like right. There's going to be another game where Alonzo just drifts around and I curse at him on my TV. I mean, like that's going to happen again.
But what I found more important than any kind of significant turning point was we might have, and we've seen it a little bit already, but we might have started to unlock, like, tangibly unlock how Lonzo and Ingram fit together. And I think, by extension, how Ingram fits just in general on an NBA court. Late in the fourth quarter, there were two or three possessions in a row where the ball just went to Ingram. He dribbled the ball for about 16 seconds and either shot a mid-range jumper or turned the ball over. And then on one possession, Lonzo just brought the ball up himself, initiated the offense, rotated the ball over to Ingram, who threw the elbow of all elbows, according to Luka Doncic, and was able to work against a moving defense, a defense in motion that is rotating over to him. And that just seems to make a lot more sense for everybody involved. Would you roll with that theory?
Yeah, no, very much so. And that's something that I'd like to see them do going forward for sure.
Yeah. So the way that I described it, or the reason why I think it makes the most sense, is Lonzo doesn't make sense as just a floor spacer, right? He's not going to be that right now. Ingram doesn't make sense as a primary ball handler who gets to face a stagnant or stationary defense. Both guys make a lot more sense when Lonzo has the ball. And even though Ingram isn't a floor spacer, he has decent instincts on attacking closeouts. He has decent instincts when it comes to cutting. All of his points, I believe, came in the paint against Dallas, either in the paint or at the free throw line. And I just think that's what you're looking for. And yes, 40-plus games into an NBA season is a little late to still be figuring something this, I think, simple out. But what you're looking for are ways to find your most important players, find ways for those guys to fit alongside each other. And more important than any kind of turning point or any sigh of relief or whatever was maybe finding that.
Very much so. And this gets to me to the point of how does Brandon Ingram succeed? So that was his career high in a regulation game, scored 29 points against the Mavericks. I'm working on this video that I'll have out by the time this podcast comes out about Lonzo and Ingram combining for 50 points, I think 11 assists, and I think 10 rebounds, or maybe I got the rebounds and assists backwards, but very productive, very efficient night, right? So I went in depth in terms of how Brandon succeeded. So he shot just 1 for 7 on pick and roll jumpers. He shot 2 for 10 on shots that weren't at the rim. Mm-hmm. So that means he was 10 of 11 at the rim.
At the rim.
And two of those makes were off of pick and rolls where guys blew the contain defense. Like, you know, Dirk trying to stop Brandon is comical, you know, on a hedge or something.
Poor guy.
And he was like, you know, 5 for 5 in transition, and, you know, one off of attacking a closeout, that bucket at the end of the game where they extended the defense too high and he got all the way to the rim, one off of a cut from a post touch on Beasley. So it's like, we saw Brandon have a great game, but I really want the Lakers to examine how he has those great games. It's not by putting the ball in his hands against a stationary defense, you know, go against that drop coverage and shoot that pull-up mid-range jumper off of the pick and roll. He can knock down mid-range shots, but he's better when it's attacking closeouts, when it's moving from sideline to sideline as opposed to going straight toward the rim, just things like that. And I feel like putting the ball in Lonzo's hands to run sets more often helps put Brandon in those positions. Last thing, there was that great play at the end of the game where Lonzo ran a pick and roll. He snaked it and got to the middle, kicked it out to Brandon. Brandon attacked the closeout, apparently killed Luka Doncic somewhere along the way with his elbow, dished it off to JaVale for a dunk. Like that play right there is the Lakers' recipe for success without LeBron in a nutshell.
Let's build on this here after the break, but I think that's a way to use Ingram with LeBron. I think
great point. Great point.
That we can use some of these principles here when LeBron comes back. So when we come back, we'll add to that. Designing an offense with Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram was always going to be difficult because of some of their overlying skill sets. There's things that there are flaws in their games that neither of them really have. It's always going to be difficult. Fortunately for the Lakers, they don't really have to do that because that LeBron guy is there, right? And he tends to fill a lot of those holes. And here's where one of the annoyances that we've had of the LeBron James, Brandon Ingram era so far this season with those two guys is it's your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn. And I just think there are ways to design sets that allow for both those guys to be involved and benefit everybody around them.
Bro, what were we talking about in the offseason about we were excited that we had all of these guys who could pass? First team in NBA history that had three guys in the top 10 in assists from the year before: Rondo, LeBron, and Lonzo. So you got all of these passers, right? You know where the Lakers rank in passes per game? They're third to last in the NBA passes per game. So if you're going to have all of these passers and you don't want a repeat of what it was like in Cleveland, and you don't want to try and beat the Warriors at their own game, you've put together this team of all these playmakers. What good is it if the ball's not moving around to get the ball in the hands of all of these different playmakers? So I'm right there with you. The your turn, my turn stuff, that is not the recipe for long-term success for this team.
And to continue with that, I think there are enough guys on the Lakers to where Ingram can play that role all the time whenever he's on the court. Whether it's if he's with LeBron, he can be the secondary creator there with those lineups. When he's with Rondo with second units, once again, Rondo initiates the offense, gets the ball rotated over to Brandon Ingram with a defense in motion, and he can continue to go at that defense that's in motion. And I think the other thing, too, with having a defense that's in motion as they're rotating over to to Ingram, as we saw with that play that you're describing earlier, where it wound up with a JaVale McGee dunk, is that puts them in an even tougher situation to help her to get to whatever pass Ingram makes if he inevitably makes that pass. And I just think, for me, you know, if you were, it's a flawed roster. But in order to best put this roster together or make this roster work, you have to utilize all these guys' skill sets. And if they're making the third least amount of passes in the entire NBA, that means they aren't getting the best out of just about anybody. Like, it's basically only LeBron is playing his best basketball right now. That's it.
And that stagnation, that's really what we're talking about. That lack of passing is a stagnation that plays into the worst elements of the team, which is their ability to shoot.
Yeah.
So it's something that you're not maximizing on one end, and you're emphasizing kind of the worst elements of the roster construction.
Yep, absolutely. I want to quickly segue over before we run out of time in this segment. I think it's significant that Lonzo and Ingram lived up to Luke Walton calling them out, not just in the media, but also behind closed doors, as we've heard it, right? And for young guys, it's very easy. We've seen it in Lakers rosters and in rosters of the past, right? Where young guys get called out and they kind of go into their shell. And we didn't see that. I thought, now, some of it was misplaced aggressiveness. I think what the Lakers staff needs to do next, now that they've kind of ignited that aggressiveness and that aggression, is to show them how to utilize that aggressiveness.
Yeah.
But at least this is a start where they got the criticism, they stepped up to it, and I'm not going to call it a turning point, but it's at least a step in the right direction.
Very much so. I would like to make the distinction, though, between Lonzo and Brandon, in that I don't feel like Brandon necessarily needs to be called out in a "you're not playing with enough fire or passion" type of sense. Most of the time, I feel like Brandon brings the correct amount of intensity. What he is to me, like, he reminds me of somebody struggling in quicksand, right? Mm-hmm. Where, like, the more he struggles, the more he sinks. He's always running into the same issues where nothing is particularly easy for him, or very few things are. Like, too much is hard for him, for a guy that has his type of length. And so for him, it's like, you know, running into the same wall rather than figuring out ways to go over it or around it.
Right.
And that speaks to your point about, like, teaching them the how, not necessarily the what. With Ingram specifically, Lonzo has even said himself, he thrives off of being called out. We know the type of personality that LeVar is, right? My dad, I actually relate to this. My dad was a drill sergeant in the Army. I've always worked well with, like, kind of hard ass people, you know, and there's a good way of, like, holding people accountable in that structure. You also have to come to a point, and this is something I've learned in my life, where Lonzo has to get to the place where he doesn't need somebody else to fire him up. That's got to be internal. And so he's 21. I understand that is something. I was not at that place in my life when I was 21.
Absolutely. But not.
He needs to learn that and in the relatively near future to be a key part of the Lakers future, because when he plays like he did last night, he's so good. That's why he's so damn frustrating, is that he's so impactful when he really has that all over the place joyous quality to his game.
I'm learning with Lonzo that his first shot is going to dictate his energy level throughout that game. Not whether or not he makes it, but how he takes it. Like, if his first shot is a ball that rotates over to him and he hesitates on firing that shot, I'm just like, oh no, it might be one of those games. Mm-hmm. We might be heading towards one of those floating games. But if the first shot that gets over to him, either he attacks the closeout right away or he just lets it rip, I think to myself, huh, this might be one of those games. Jen, you might want to watch this game, right?
Yeah. And you can even see, like, how he just pushes the ball up court. Like, sometimes he'll get a rebound and it's like Alonzo fast break and everybody is kind of, like, lagging behind it. He might not get the shot out of it. He had one assist to JaVale McGee where he kind of created this fast break out of nothing and dumped it off, and McGee hit this nice hook shot in the paint. But, like, those type of, like, creating life where there is none type of thing. I know it's a very esoteric type of way of looking at it, but, like, there's a joy, there's a passion that you can tell whether or not he has that very early on.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, we'll discuss Luke Walton. There was some interesting stuff swirling around this last game. that's about as well as I can tease that. So we'll get back right back to it here in a second. So already heading into the Lakers game against the Dallas Mavericks, Dave McMenamin, I believe either I forget what the parameters of the discussion was, but it was basically Luke can't have another game like he did against Minnesota, right? Or the Lakers can't play another game like he did against Minnesota, right? And during the telecast on Sportsnet, they go out there and they say, "Oh, hey, Rob Pelinka just happens to be in town for this one," right? And it was framed around like, "Oh, he's out there to scout something or other, whatever." I am of the opinion that there are very few coincidences, especially in the NBA. Uh-huh. And you know, maybe is all I'll say, right? Like maybe he was out there for another reason. The Lakers wind up coming back. I'm sure Rob Pelinka just gave Luke a high five as he was walking back into the tunnel, and everything is hunky-dory now. My question to you, though, is of the speculation that has been swirling around here with LeBron out and with the Lakers struggling over the last four or five games, of all of the speculation of is Luke's job in jeopardy, are they looking to make all these trades, how far on a scale of 1 to 10 are you willing to go with that speculation? Like how much of it would you say is warranted?
I think that's a good question with probably a complicated answer to it. I think it would be a hard sell to try to replace Walton with LeBron out, to Jeannie Buss in particular. I think we kind of have a good read in terms of, like, it's not that like Magic and Pelinka don't like Luke. That's not necessarily it, right? Yeah. He's just not their guy, right? Mm-hmm. The same is true of LeBron, but he very much is Jeannie's guy, right? And Jeannie did hire him and was part of that process, and she does advocate for him. I think it would be hard for Magic and Pelinka to start bending Jeannie's ear to do something like that in a time where LeBron is out. So in that respect, I don't take it too far. I do think Pelinka's presence, if nothing else, sends a message. We can speculate how strong or how, you know, like, does that mean he's fired if they lose in Dallas last night? I don't think so. But it sends a message of some sort or not. In terms of trade speculation, I don't think that there's a whole lot that moves the needle from the Lakers' perspective right now in terms of how they play, and that, like, they're looking to move to make a move for a superstar. And so if Anthony Davis comes available, and let's not beat around the bush, right? If Davis becomes available, yes, the young guys are available.
They're gone.
I don't think, right, exactly. But beyond that, I don't think that's necessarily what they're looking to do right now. Like, you know, you could make an argument for Bradley Beal. We talked about this on Twitter, but I do think that ultimately that's not a move they'd be looking to do, right? Mm-hmm. I think we're in a weird part of the season with a lot of injuries and Lakers aren't playing well, and it's easy for our minds to wander a little bit, but I think ultimately there's not a whole lot to it. Do you think maybe there's a little more to it than I do?
Here's how I would put it. I would agree with you that it's not a matter of Magic or LeBron or Pelinka not liking Luke. I think everybody involved here likes Luke immensely. He's a very likable guy. I do, however, think that they went into this season looking for a reason, right? Like, it's like when you're getting ready to get into a fight and you know you can kick the other guy's ass, you say, like, give me a reason, yeah. Kid.
Sure.
You know? And I think that's kind of how they went into this year with Luke, is like, give me a reason. Just tell me, like, show me something or don't show me something, and we can finally make that case to Jeannie. And I completely agree that Jeannie is the one who is absolutely Luke's biggest voice in the room, right? Biggest voice of support in the room. Mm-hmm. That looking for a reason thing is not always logical. And I think Pelinka being in Dallas last night is a sign of while I don't think Magic would have or Luke would have been fired after a Dallas game, unless they would have been blown out and it looked very obvious that Luke just isn't getting through to anybody involved. You know, if they would have lost by 40 or something last night, I think we're having a very different discussion right now. But I do think that it's not so much that they're pulling for Luke to fail. I don't think that at all. But it's just like, you know, there are guys out there that we trust more, that we can bend a little bit more with, that we can work a little bit more with. And I think that they being Pelinka, Magic, and LeBron are all looking for ways or scenarios where they can get their guy in.
No, I think that's absolutely the case. And I think that's natural, right? When you're in a leadership position, you want people who you hired, who share your vision and that, you know, what we're generally talking about here is just the benefit of the doubt. You phrase it as that, you know, guy, like, give me a reason. Yeah. But it's also the, like, I'm willing to accept a little bit more because I know that we are rowing in the same direction, which I don't think there's necessarily a lot of, you know, disconnect between how Luke wants to do things and the organization. The one thing I will say, and again, the tone of this pod is different because the Lakers came back. Mm-hmm. What I did not like during the tough times of this past week or two is how little, if at all, Luke looked inward or at least publicly kind of took the blame for things were going on. Like when you're talking about, oh, we just weren't ready to start the game, you know, against the Knicks or against the Wolves, like part of that's the coach's job, right? And it's to get the overall team ready to compete. And I didn't hear any comments from him taking any ownership.
And he's usually really good with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's more pressure on him than there's ever been before for the same reason that we've just been talking about with, you know, give me a reason. Right.
Yeah.
And so I feel like when people are under pressure, they're going to start to show kind of what they really believe and what, even if they don't mean to it. And I just didn't like the fingers pointed outward as much as they were.
Yeah. One thing that I always kind of pick up on, especially from a coach that we hear from every single day, essentially from, you know, whether it's in practices or in games or whatever. But one thing that I really started to notice more of from Luke was with every question that was lobbed towards him, instead of, he's usually pretty introspective and he'll kind of think things through and then he'll agree or disagree with you or going in one way or the other. But I thought he was really defensive with a lot of his answers recently. It was a lot of immediate like, no, and here's why not. And no, even if he was agreeing with you, like one thing that you can kind of pick up from, if you actually, like, we do a lot of transcribing here with Silver Screen and Roll, and you actually read the answers and you're like, you said no and then wound up agreeing, right? And I think what that shows me a lot is this guy was really feeling the heat because he's usually a pretty agreeable guy.
For sure. And with LeBron and Rondo out, the Lakers need leadership. I think this is a period of time where Luke's leadership abilities are more accentuated than they would be normally. Mm-hmm. And so those are the times to step up and be like, no, this is my problem and I'm going to help fix this. We're going to work on this together to get to the point where we need to, but be assertive rather than blaming it, you know, mm-hmm. and especially with as young as the roster is and with LeBron and Rondo being the definitive leaders of the team, that's something that I've wanted to see more of from Luke that we haven't seen. I mean, hopefully they start playing better. It becomes less of an issue, but I just didn't like how he handled this last week or two.
Yeah, me neither. All right, that'll do it for this episode. It's a little bit shorter episode just because, honestly, I can't talk. So we will send you guys on your merry way. Look, the Lakers won. We get to take a sigh of relief. If the Lakers lose tomorrow against Detroit, it'll be a completely different conversation that we're having, and I'm sure once again the vultures will be swirling. But for now, have a great rest of your day, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a good one, Pete.
Have a good one, man. Feel better.